Chapter 29, A New Year. Blizzard winds were still pelting the sliding glass doors of the lounge room when Peter opened his eyes the next morning. The windows were completely blanketed over with snow, but everything was warm and cosy inside. It was Wednesday morning, the first day of a new year. For a while, Peter lay comfortably in bed, listening to the news on his bedside radio and thinking how happy he was to be safely back in Stirling. The traffic report stated that most highways were now closed, 4 people had died in a multiple car accident, and 2 others were injured. Even the snow ploughs had been taken off the roads early that morning. 20 more centimetres of snow and high winds had made travelling impossible for anyone. The reporter cautioned everyone to stay put, saying that even if the storm died down that afternoon as predicted, it could be a couple of days before all the roads could be cleared. Peter shivered, thinking of what might have happened if Bob hadn't come by in his big transport truck. He thought of his own car, buried in snow at the side of the road, and imagined the massive blades of a snowplough ripping past. Would the old Mazda still be in one piece when he could finally drive back to dig it out? He sure hoped so, but then again, if it were totaled, at least he didn't know anything on it, unlike the BMW. There was no use worrying. Nothing could be done until the storm was over, and at least he and Jessica were safe and sound. Suddenly Peter remembered all the prayers Jessica had given along the way. He remembered carelessly attributing their safety to luck, and Jessica's gentle reminder that God answers prayer. Peter felt ashamed that he had fallen asleep the night before without personally thanking God for his care. Sitting up in bed, he began with a prayer of thanks, but it didn't end there. He had so much more to say to God now. He wanted God's help in finding truth, in developing faith, in overcoming sin, in sharing the gospel with Rose, and he also prayed that God would give him the opportunity to be baptized. Peter knew he needed salvation, true salvation, before the return of Jesus Christ to the earth. There were a few footsteps on the floor above Peter's head, even though it was still quite early in the morning. Pulling on his black polar fleece jacket, Peter walked over to his computer and turned it on. He knew there would be 2 weeks' worth of invoices and customer requests to sort through, and he wanted a head start. While everyone in Stirling was completely snowed in, at least electricity was still flowing through the lines. Once he'd logged onto the internet, Peter quickly scanned his incoming mail, hoping there might be something from Rose. Surely she'd read his letter by now. But although there were at least 50 new messages, all of them were from Australia except one, and that was from Andrew. Curiously, Peter opened his brother's message first. It was brief. "Pete, I'm sorry I've taken so long to agree to the debate, but the Christmas season is always a very hectic time for me. Tell Mr. Simons that I'd be happy to debate him. I've never debated anyone before, and I'm not quite sure how it's done. Perhaps Mr. Simons and I should discuss the format. My church is probably the best location if Mr. Simons is comfortable coming there, as most of my congregation will probably want to attend. This whole issue is getting out of hand, Pete. Tony and Sue are so mixed up they hardly know what to think. It's time to set everyone straight, including my brothers. I'm really surprised you can't see through the issues more clearly, but then you've been away from God and his word for so long that it must be hard to remember what you used to know. Anyway, if February the 6th works for Mr. Simons, that would be great. It's the earliest that I can commit to. God bless, Andrew." So, Andrew had accepted the challenge. Peter was surprised and pleased, even if the condescending tones of the email stirred up some anxiety. How Peter hoped that this issue wasn't going to divide his family, especially not at the very time when they were all going to be living so close to each other. His mum and dad planned to move into their new house in less than 2 weeks. Peter knew they intended to go to Andrew's church, and that they hoped to encourage James to come more frequently as well. Sitting back in his chair with a lonely sigh, Peter imagined how it would feel to be ostracized from his family. He didn't want all the others to turn their backs on him. He didn't want to feel that he was the odd one out. But how important was truth? And how much did he love it? Peter's thoughts were suddenly interrupted. "Breakfast is ready," Alan called out as he headed upstairs. There was a lovely aroma of steaming hot pancakes drifting down from above. When Peter reached the top landing, he could hear Craig and Jessica talking. "I don't know, Jess," Craig was saying. "I'm not sure it's a good idea, so soon." "Please, Dad," Jessica begged as Peter hesitated outside the kitchen. This sounded like a family discussion, and Peter wasn't sure he should go in. "They really need the help," he continued, "and I'd just love to go." "I know you would, honey," Craig's voice responded gently, "but you've got school loans to repay. But not right away, Dad. What if I go just for 6 months then? I can try and get a job in September. Craig looked up and saw Peter standing in the doorway. Come on in, Pete, he said warmly. You're part of the family. In fact, I might even ask for your opinion. After Craig gave thanks to God, Beth Simons passed around a plate of hot banana pancakes. They were delicious. Peter knew from past experience that Beth's pancakes were wonderful with peanut butter and jam, and great with maple syrup. During the meal, Craig and Beth asked Jessica to give them more information about her plans for Jamaica, inquiring as to who was organising it, what the young people would be doing, who was supervising, what kind of funds were required, and so on. Knowing how much Jessica really wanted to do missionary work, Peter was surprised that she wasn't insisting she be allowed to go. She was truly asking for permission, rather than asserting her right to do as she pleased. Peter was impressed. What about being a missionary right here in Stirling? Craig asked with a smile. We sure could use your help. Oh, but Dad, there's lots of people to help out here. There are a good number of us now, Craig agreed soberly, but not everyone is so keen to preach. Peter was thankful that Craig didn't ask for his opinion on the matter. He wasn't sure what he would say, given the chance. In all truthfulness, he hoped Jessica's parents would tell her she couldn't go. He wanted her to stay, but he certainly didn't want to provoke any more disappointed looks. When breakfast was over and Peter was loading the dishwasher, Craig said, Mum and I will have to talk this over, Jess. It's a good cause, and we're happy that you're interested in helping out in this way. Giving his daughter a hug, he admitted, We just hate to see you leaving again so soon. Peter followed Craig out to the living room after the others had dispersed and told him, I got an email from Andrew this morning, and he's willing to do the debate. Craig looked pleased as Peter relayed the message. He was eager to make plans. He thought February the 6th would be fine and that Andrew's church was a great location. I've never given a debate before either, he mused, but I'm sure it'll be a good opportunity for everyone to hear both sides. Since they were housebound for the rest of the day, Craig suggested they all start the new year off right and begin the day with the Bible readings. As everyone took their seats in the Simons' living room on the various mismatched pieces of furniture, Peter silently made his first official New Year's resolution. This year, he wanted to follow the Simons' Bible reading planner faithfully, every day, whether he was with them or not. The very first reading was from Genesis chapters 1 and 2. With plenty of time and nowhere to go, the discussion on creation was wonderful. There was one particular question of Alan's that sparked Peter's interest. Chapter 2 had given further detail about the sixth day of creation, describing the formation of a woman for Adam. God had specifically said, in the old King James version that the Simons like to use, It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an help meet for him. What's a help meet? Alan asked. Beth handed him a concordance. Good question, Alan. Why don't you check it out and let us all know? Alan looked at both the word and its root words, but he didn't seem to be overly impressed by the meaning. It just has the idea of help, to surround, protect, or aid, he stated. Nothing more was said about it, but the idea struck Peter rather forcefully. Was that the true purpose behind God giving Adam a wife? Was a wife supposed to surround, protect, and aid? It sounded like a wonderful plan. It was exactly what he'd determined he needed. It was exactly what Verity had been. As they began the next reading in Psalms, Peter tucked the thought away in his mind. Psalm 1 seemed incredibly appropriate for the first day of a new year. It began with the words, Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. I suppose there's a saying, Peter considered during the discussion that followed, that if we want to grow like a tree beside a river, then we need to love God's word and spend time thinking about it. This book is the water of life. Everyone agreed with him. Because of his spiritual relapse over the holidays, Peter now felt he truly understood how important this was. Every time he sat down with the Simons to read from the Bible, there was always at least one verse that readjusted his thinking and set him back on the right path. After a great start to the year in Genesis, Psalms, and Matthew, and a very relaxed discussion all the way through, Alan suggested they spend some time outdoors. Peter and Jessica agreed. Snow was heaped up everywhere and the sun had begun to shine through. Finding their winter gear more quickly than Jessica, Peter and Alan were out the door first. The air temperature had risen considerably and the snow was now heavy and wet. When Peter tested a large clump between his gloves, he quickly ascertained that it was perfect for packing together. Quickly he threw his snowball at Alan, and a second later he was ducking one in return. Soon they were chasing each other around the house, as fast as they could in thigh-deep snow. It was full-blown warfare. Finally, Peter cornered Alan by the fence and was just about to rub a mound of snow into his face when he noticed that Alan was looking at something else with an anxious expression. Peter turned to see what it was, and a large snowball hit him right between his eyes. "Oh, I'm sorry, Peter," Jessica cried out in dismay, holding her mitten-covered hands up to her face. "That was supposed to be for Alan." Wiping the snow from his face with a grin, Peter hesitated, wondering whether or not Jess really wanted to get involved. There was no hesitation on Alan's part. "Guys against girls," he yelled out, charging forward. It was completely unfair, but Jessica didn't seem to mind. It was great fun until Alan tackled Jess into a snowdrift. Peter watched in concern as Alan plastered his sister's face with snow and tried to stuff some down her back. When it looked as though the young teen was getting too carried away, Peter stepped in. "Hey, take it easy, mate," he said with a laugh, pulling Alan back. Reaching out, he helped Jess to her feet and brushed the snow off her face. "She's a girl, remember?" "Whose side are you on?" Alan protested. "I think I need to be on your sister's," Peter laughed. Alan didn't respond in words, but with a sly grin, he quickly made two more snowballs and threw them both at once. The wall was on again, but with a different alignment. When they were too exhausted to run and throw snow anymore, they sprawled out on the drifts in the front yard. "What shall we do next?" Alan wondered out loud. "Find a hill to toboggan on, or maybe we can make a snow sculpture?" Peter looked at the driveway and the huge drifts running across. Someone was going to have to clear it out eventually. If he piled all that snow on the front lawn, they'd have enough to make something big. "How about I shovel the driveway," he suggested, "and you and Jess make the sculpture?" So for the next 3 hours, that's exactly what they did. Only a giant Stegosaurus dinosaur takes more snow than one driveway provides. But the elderly neighbour next door appreciated his driveway being cleared, and so did the family on the other side. When Jessica brought out some paint and the three of them got creative, they had a comical masterpiece. Craig even came out to take a picture. 2 days went by before all the roads were clear again, and Peter spent most of that time working on his computer, trying hard to get caught up. He had several email requests for landscape designs, but he only said yes to one. The maintenance work seemed to be keeping his crew busy enough in Australia. He already had Steve Willoughby's contract, and he was quite content working part-time. While he wanted to keep his business going, it was no longer the first priority in his life. He wanted time right now, much more than money. There was so much else going on. He wanted to keep attending the Bible seminars every Tuesday. He was enjoying the sessions on Luke as much as the ones on prophecy. On Sundays, the Simons and the Lovells met with several other families to remember Christ, and Peter always came along. Then there were the Bible readings every night and his own personal study, his brother to visit, and time with his family and friends. Such freedom and flexibility were new luxuries in his life, and Peter wasn't about to let them go. As soon as it was safe to travel, Craig, Peter, and Alan made the two-hour trek to retrieve Peter's car. Assuming that the Mazda would be buried under mounds of snow, they wondered if they would even be able to find it, but it was spotted easily enough. The snowplough had scraped the snow away close to one side of the vehicle. Unfortunately, some of the paint had been taken off the doors, and there were a few minor dents. However, compared to the damage that could have occurred, Peter felt very thankful. After digging for a couple of hours, they were finally able to push the car out of the ditch and get it back onto the road. Alan wanted to ride home with Peter, and before they set off, Peter remembered to say a prayer of thanks to God. Whether it was good luck that his car was safe and sound or providence, Peter wanted to give the credit to God. On the way back, Alan did most of the talking. Having turned 15 over the holidays, he was having his own issues at school and with friends that he wanted to relay to Peter. With the experience that Peter had gained in Granville, he was able to offer advice, or at least pass on some of the advice that Thomas had given him. "So you're not going out with Rose anymore?" Alan clarified as they approached the outskirts of Stirling. "That's right, I'm not," Peter confirmed. "But I did write her a long letter before I left, and I hope I'll hear back from her soon. I haven't given up completely. If she could just see how interesting and important the gospel message is, then I'm sure God will change her life like he has mine." On Sunday evening, Peter sat with the Simons in their living room once again. The last reading in Matthew chapter 7 led to an interesting conversation. Jesus had given a parable about two builders. One man built his house on a rock, while the other man built on the sand. All was well until the rain came down. Then the torrents of water swept the house on the sand away, but the house on the rock stood firm. What's the difference between the two builders? Beth asked Alan. Alan tried a couple of answers before getting it right. Oh, I get it, he said at last after reading carefully. It's easy. One did what Jesus said and the other one didn't. Exactly, Beth praised. Both heard Jesus' words, but only the wise builder did them. Alan finished. That's a good point, Peter reflected carefully. He thought back on his conversation with James in the hospital. He remembered feeling like a hypocrite at Cara's. That means it really is important to follow Jesus' commands. Beth nodded with a smile. We can't ever earn our salvation, but Jesus said in John 15, "Ye are my friends, if ye do whatsoever I command you." Do you remember Cornelius, the Gentile centurion? Craig asked. Peter shook his head, and Craig suggested they read a section from Acts chapter 10. Cornelius was a devout man, Craig commented, who had done many good things for the Jews and prayed to God always. God was pleased with the man's prayers and his life, but he still deemed it necessary to bring Cornelius the full gospel message. In order to do this, God sent the apostle Peter to instruct Cornelius in the way of salvation. When Cornelius understood the true gospel, then he received the Holy Spirit and was baptized. Nodding slowly in agreement, Peter replied, "So I guess if we want to be sure our house is built on the rock, then we need to be sure we understand what God requires." "That's right," Beth agreed. "We have to read God's word to know what he wants us to do, and then we have to go out and live it. We can't do one without the other."